Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Saturday, August 6th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, PSP addresses health facility reports. Official. Hub part of conversation after assessment points out gaping holes in Midland, Odessa. By Stuart Doreen. Editor's note. The following is the first of two stories about a conversation with Tracy Bentley with the Permian Strategic Partnership about the possibility of the creation of a regional healthcare complex. Yes, the Permian Strategic Partnership is working on the possible creation of a transformative healthcare hub for Midland, Odessa. However, media reports up to this point have lacked other detail, fueling speculation and misconceptions that officials wanted to address. Permian Strategic Partnership Executive Director Tracy Bentley talked to the Reporter Telegram this week about the years the coalition of 17 energy companies have spent on improving healthcare in the region, an assessment that pointed out some gaping holes here in Midland, Odessa, the potential of a regional approach, and the extremely long-term project that officials are talking about. Bentley said medical leaders in Midland and Odessa have been consulted and are working with the Permian Strategic Partnership, the Scarborough Foundation, the University of Texas System, and the Texas Tech University Health Sciences System. She also added the number one concern, regardless of what happens with this hub, is getting a planned behavioral health center across the finish line. Officials have said the state has committed $40 million of the $90 million needed for a mental health facility, unlike anything that exists in Midland, Odessa, or the region. That facility is also the focus of officials with Midland Health, the Ector County Hospital District, and foundation officials across the region. The Behavioral Health Center is the first piece to a potential healthcare hub, Bentley told the Reporter Telegram. And we think it makes good sense that wherever the Behavioral Health Center lands is a good place to potentially put more things like a pediatric center or a cancer center or a new nursing lab. You get my drift. The Behavioral Health Center could be a cornerstone for what is in our future potentially. An assessment tells the story. The Permian Strategic Partnership has already spent more than $41 million on healthcare initiatives across the region. The last of the list PSP healthcare projects offered to the Reporter Telegram was $700,000 on an assessment completed by Chartis, which, according to the company's website, the assessment pointed out that the Midland-Odessa metropolitan area has, quote, one of the lowest healthcare economies among all metropolitan areas in the entire U.S., unquote, according to Bentley. So, if the Midland-Odessa healthcare economy was on par with the national average, our total healthcare economy would be about $4.5 billion, Bentley said. Efficiencies included access to specialty care, rural healthcare facilities struggling with connectivity, and primary care access. The assessment also showed that almost 50% of people leave the region for healthcare, specifically for specialty reasons. We don't think it needs to be that way, Bentley said. We think that over time, we can recruit the specialists and we can recruit the talent. We're about $1.5 billion short of being on par with the national average. We also know when you invest in healthcare, like other places have done, it helps your overall economy. You live in a much healthier place, and it creates economic diversity, which even my companies would say is a great and healthy thing. Lastly, the assessment pointed out that a regional approach to healthcare could benefit the region, as there were duplicative efforts that made healthcare less efficient. And really, as we started looking at the assessment, we thought, why aren't we thinking bigger? Bentley said. All eyes are on the Permian Basin right now, and they're going to continue to be for the foreseeable future. We think it's our duty to make sure that we continue to do what we do best, which is produce clean and reliable energy, and that we've got to have a healthy community in order to be able to do that. They are big, lofty goals. Should officials in Midland, Odessa do more than fill gaps in regional healthcare and attempt to make the Permian Basin a healthcare destination with a world-class center for healthcare, it would not happen overnight. Should the communities decide to create options for women and children, cancer patients, trauma, a teaching hospital, or other things that bring people from across the region to Midland, Odessa, the time frame is closer to 15 to 20 years, if at all. But I think if we don't do any, we're not doing ourselves a service by not investigating whether or not these things are even possible, Bentley said. Maybe the answer comes back, and it is just too big of a stretch for the Permian to host something like this. But at least we know. And at least we did our homework. Nobody is saying that any of this is inevitable, except for the Behavioral Health Center. Bentley talked about there are no plans about emptying buildings, contradicting media reports from earlier in the week, of any healthcare facility in Midland, Odessa. She said it is entirely premature to determine specifics, including location, project price, or project plans. Officials with the hospital districts in both Midland and Odessa would agree, as tax money they currently receive could only be diverted to a Permian Basin health organization with the approval of voters. Higher-level conversations are what is taking place right now, Bentley said. Those conversations would then likely involve state lawmakers to what investment the legislature would be willing to make, or, as local residents say, how much money the Permian Basin sends to Austin could be sent back to take care of health care in the region. During the last session, organizations like the PSP and the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance helped lobby to make roadway commitments in excess of $600 million possible. The region also received that $40 million for a mental health facility. Bentley said there has been participation from those at Midland Health, MCH in Odessa, and at more rural hospitals across southeast New Mexico and West Texas. Should the plan continue forward, more comments from the community will be required. As we start to sift through more information and the assessment, and really kind of hone in on what is feasible and what is not feasible, we had planned to absolutely have discussions and engage the community, Bentley said. This article is entitled, Blong, Mayoral Run About Serving Midland. District 4 Representative, I feel like it is a position that is critical for our community. By Stuart Doreen. When it comes to city leadership, Lori Merritt Blong said continuity and stability are important. That may be especially true as only one Midland City Council member has more than 5 years of experience, and a majority of members are still in their first terms. Blong announced Friday she is running to become the next mayor of Midland, one day after current mayor Patrick Payton announced he will not seek re-election. Blong is the representative of District 4, generally West Midland, and had announced her intention to run for re-election there, but the opportunity to be mayor was one she couldn't pass up. I feel like it is a position that is critical for our community, Blong said. I want to serve in that role. It hasn't taken long for Blong to hit her stride as an influential member of the current Midland City Council. She has taken the lead on roles, especially when it comes to parks like the Midland Trail Park, a partnership with the Permian Basin Bicycle Association in southeast Midland, and the $55 million renovation of Hogan Park, a public-private project. This is a job I take very seriously. It is more service-oriented than I realized, Blong said. I have worked really hard to listen to community members and to make decisions that take everyone's viewpoint into account. She considered the last 2.5 years largely a time that city leaders have been, quote, taking care of business, unquote. Following the COVID pandemic, she and the rest of the council have focused on finishing the voter-approved road bond, working on water sources and delivery for city residents, making City Hall business-friendly, and improving pay for first responders and increasing their personnel numbers. Basic city business, she said, have trumped crazy projects. And she said taking care of business should remain the focus heading into the next 3 years. Blong is a mother of three, a wife, and founder and partner of Octane Energy. She said family was considered when going into politics, and that she considers being a wife, mother, and business leader as important. But to have a Midland that residents can be happy to call home now and in the future, I am called to serve for the benefit of my family and other families. I want to stay the course and to continue to fight for individual liberties and conservative values on a local level, to make prudent financial decisions with our taxpayer dollars, and to ensure that Midland is well positioned for the future, Blong previously told the Reporter-Telegram. Blong will have a rally at the second-story co-working space, 223 West Wall Street, at 5:30 p.m. Tuesday. The mayor's seat is one of three places on the November ballot. Districts 3 and 4 are the others. The sign-up period started on July 25th. The last day to put a name on a local ballot is August 22nd. This column is called Biz Buzz. It is entitled A Home for Midland Card Players. Kojak's Poker Club fosters clean, organized play for players of all ages, classes, professions. By Ben Schaffer. Kojak's Poker Club on West Cuthbert Avenue is a fun and safe way to build community through cards. According to Charlie Whittle, a staff member since the day it opened, Kojak's began when two individuals sought out a more sheltered outlet to enjoy the popular playing card game in West Texas. There was a free poker league in Midland, Odessa. It's called Lone Star Poker League, he said. The Lone Star Poker League began playing games in homes and bars around the local area. Home games are kind of sketchy, you know. You don't trust the neighborhood, you don't trust the people, Whittle said. For this reason, the two decide to open Kojak's Poker Club, a members-only club built to foster clean and organized play 4 years ago. In 2020, a man named Clyde Hinton bought into the club. He and his daughter began running it, and Clyde eventually bought the entire poker room, Whittle said. Hinton passed away on August 8, 2021, but his daughter purchased the club from him, making her the sole owner, or the poker goddess of Midland, Odessa, according to Whittle. Community feel. General Manager Brendan Hughes claimed a major reason he made the move from the Northeast to Midland was how quickly he felt included and made relationships at Kojak's. I was down here for about a week working, and within the second day it seemed like I had developed friendships with the players in here. Poker in general, while it's huge, it's actually a tight-knit community. The people that do play, we see them often, Hughes said. The players, who are required to be at least 21 years old to gain membership to the club, span all ages, classes, and professions. Anywhere from 21. I'd have to look to see what my oldest member is, but I'd say he's in his 70s. Male, female, it does not matter. It is something for everyone, Hughes said. Hughes also enjoys witnessing friendly player interactions at Kojak's. You'll hear joking non-stop from table to table, from player to player. It's all light-hearted. It's a good, fun atmosphere, Hughes said. Beyond just playing cards, there are means for additional entertainment, enhancing the entire player experience. We're here for Sunday football. On Saturday nights, we'll get the UFC fights. We have a pool table, a few arcade games. It is a BYOB, so you're more than welcome to come in, have a drink, relax, or just watch sports, whatever the case may be, Hughes remarked. Appearance-wise, the club is pristine and well-maintained. The gray felt tables are without wear and tear. The black leather chairs around them look as if they were just purchased. Kojak's has grown exponentially since its founding around 4 years ago, according to Whittle. I think we're on member number 8,700 right now, he said. Legality. Hughes, who moved to Midland from his home in Philadelphia to manage Kojax, commented on the legality of competition at a Texas private club. The state has looked into clubs like Kojax and others with a magnifying glass, according to Hughes. However, it's clear that participation at this club is completely legal and moral. Number one, poker is classified as a game of skill, not a game of chance, he said. Games of chance would be other common gambling activities like blackjack, roulette, or craps. Hughes then explained the biggest difference between Kojax and a casino. A poker room at a casino makes their money through a rake, or taking a percentage out of every pot that players play. We do not do that, he said. We are a membership club. You have to be a member to come in the doors. Secondly, we basically rent our seats by the hour, and that's how we make our income. Whittle also spoke on the staff's vigilance. Collusion is a big thing in certain areas, not here. We watch film on our players. We're constantly watching. Events. Kojax holds events and tournaments throughout each month. They feature a full calendar online. We run four tournaments a year. We run the Permian Basin Poker Series in October, and we run the West Texas Poker Championships in March. Those are two-week tournaments each. Then we run two little tournaments, the Summer Mini-Series, which is a week long, and the Winter Mini-Series, which is a week long, Whittle said. He continued to claim that most players like the two-day main events. In August, each day corresponds with a different poker event. Kojax Poker Club's weekly schedule. Where, 3205 West Cuthbert Avenue, Suite 8 to 9 in Midland. 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. Sundays. Games alternate between a $250 and $220 bounty game. Mondays closed. 6 p.m. to 2 a.m. Tuesdays, $280 freeze-out tournament. 6 p.m. to 4 a.m. Wednesdays, games and tournaments vary by week. August 10th, $250 no-limit hold'em tournament. August 17th, $200 pot limit Omaha. August 24th, $200 Big O. August 31st, free roll tournament, free to enter. 6 p.m. to 4 a.m. Thursdays, $150 round of each tournament. 5 p.m. to 4 a.m. Fridays, games are free play from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Noon to 4 a.m. Saturdays, $120 no-limit hold'em tournament. Online, kojaxpokerclub.com. Contact 432-770-7038 or info@kojaxpokerclub.com. This article is entitled Tall City Blues Fest Announces This Year's Lineup by Morgan Taylor Thomas. The Tall City Blues Fest announced its 2022 lineup this week. This year's event will take place on September 24th at the Destination Midland. General admission presale tickets are $20 per person. VIP All Access are $125, which includes an invitation to the VIP kickoff party, complimentary food truck service from some of the vendors, VIP deck area, special reserve bar, executive-style bathrooms, and VIP merchandise. Founders and friends of the festival get a special pricing on upgrading to VIP. The 2022 lineup. KT and the Blues Scientists. Former Long John Hunter drummer Kevin Taylor, KT, guides his own crew as guitar frontman, making groovy, organic collections of blues. 12:30 p.m. to 2:45 p.m., the destination stage, part of the sponsor and VIP party. Tony Barker Band. Nominated for Singer-Songwriter of the Year by the Academy of Texas Music, Tony Barker is a jack-of-all-trades, telling real-life stories through his music. 3 p.m. to 6 p.m., the destination stage, part of the sponsor and VIP party. The Corbells. festival opener and representing the Greater West Texas Blues Society in this year's International Blues Challenge. This father-son duo plays homage to legends such as John Lee Hooker and Muddy Waters. 3 p.m. to 3:45 p.m., Old Lumberyard Stage. Jet Black. Pulling inspiration from Lead Belly and Howling Wolf, Jet Black uses slide guitar and body-moving beats to create soulful sounds. 4 p.m. to 4:45 p.m., Old Lumberyard Stage. In layman's terms. Made up of Cole and Logan Lehman, this rhythmic brother-sister duo pushes the boundaries of blues and paving the way for a new generation of fellow former Tall City Blues Fest's youth group, Roaring Artists. 5 p.m. to 5:45 p.m., Old Lumberyard Stage. Dirty Red and the Soul Shakers. All the way from Oklahoma City, fierce harmonica master Eric McDaniel and wicked guitarist Ike Lamb combine their talents with a funky rhythm backing, consequently making red-hot music. 6 p.m. to 7 p.m., Old Lumberyard Stage. John Sprott Blues Band. This classic crew represented the Greater West Texas Blues Society at the International Blues Challenge in January. They combine original blues beats with modern times and always provide stellar entertainment. 7:15 p.m. to 8:15 p.m., Old Lumberyard Stage. Mr. Sip. A fest favorite, this year's headliner charms and scandalizes the crowd simultaneously, bringing that Mississippi twang to the Tall City. 8:30 p.m. to 9:45 p.m., Old Lumberyard Stage. Noah Wutherspoon. Festival closer and Dayton, Ohio native. Wutherspoon's rich, soulful words and hypnotizing riffs bring his soul music to galactic heights. 10 p.m. to 11 p.m., Old Lumberyard Stage. This article is entitled Big Bend Celebrates Opening of New Hiking Trail by Mercedes Cordero. The National Park Service announced Friday the opening of the Lone Mountain Trail. The moderately challenging 3-mile loop goes around the base of Lone Mountain, an imposing feature just north of park headquarters at Panther Junction, according to a press release. With only 200 feet of elevation, the trail will be a good hiking destination for families with children. Lone Mountain Trail could be accessed 1 mile north of Panther Junction. Hikers will be able to see views of the Chisos, Rocios, and Dead Horse Mountains, along with the volcanic features of Lone Mountain and the wide variety of desert plants and animals, according to the press release. With over 200 miles of trails, Big Bend is a world-renowned hiking location, said Big Bend National Park Superintendent Bob Krumenaker. And we're proud to add this new feature opportunity so close to Panther Junction, the first stop for so many park visitors. Lone Mountain Trail was planned and constructed by the Big Bend National Park Trail crew with help from Texas Conservation Corps. For those planning to visit Big Bend, the park rangers remind all visitors to be aware of the dangers of extreme heat. Hikers should be prepared to carry and drink 1 gallon of water per day and to plan to be off desert trails by noon. This article is entitled Dirty Snatcha to Perform at La Hacienda Saturday by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Born and raised in England, Dirty Snatcha, a.k.a. Lee Bray, produces a variety of dubstep-focused tracks filled with unique sounds and electric rhythms. After leaving a 9-to-5 office job in 2014, the artist started producing music and since has created his own label, Dirty Snatcha Records. There, he has released music for Philadelphia dubstep musician Subtronics, Jesse Carden, Dallas native Hesh, Joey Verando, London boy but based in Los Angeles, DJ Monks, Josh Carling, and more. Collaborations with artists such as El Paso DJ and producer Raya 10, Christopher Wilson, Rico Act, Terrell Koivu, and Floridian Lucci, Emily Rose, Phil Dirty Snatch's resume, making him a standout musician. As part of his supersonic tour, the rhythmic creator will be at La Hacienda on Saturday. Tickets and more information can be found here. Musical guest Carbon will open the show. This column is called Crime in Brief. Midland are guilty of hate crimes charges still to be tried in Midland Court. Jose Gomez III, who was sentenced to 25 years in prison on Thursday by a federal court for the hate crime attack on an Asian family at the Midland Sam's Club in March 2020, still has pending cases in Midland County, according to District Attorney Laura Nodolf. Gomez's plea agreement and sentencing do not affect his pending charges in state court, according to Nodolf. A grand jury indicted Gomez on June 11, 2020, on 3 counts of attempted capital murder, 1 count of aggravated assault, and 2 counts of assault on a public servant, for a separate incident on March 17. Gomez will be remanded to the Midland County Sheriff's Department for the continued prosecution of those charges, according to Nodolf. Big Spring man gets 35 years in prison for sexual assault of a child. A 38-year-old Big Spring man was sentenced Thursday to 35 years in prison after a Midland County jury found him guilty of continuous sexual abuse of a young child and compelling prostitution under 18, according to a press release from the Midland County District Attorney's Office. The jury heard evidence Tuesday and Wednesday before finding Timothy Duane Poor guilty. The jury assessed punishment at 35 years for continuous sexual abuse of a young child and 5 years for compelling prostitution under 18. The sentences will run concurrently, according to the press release. Evidence presented during the case showed that Poor molested a child around 9 years old and would give presents and money in exchange for the acts of sexual abuse, according to the press release. The abuse continued until April 2021, when the child's mother discovered money from an incident. The child then made an outcry to her mother. Later, she disclosed that the abuse had happened multiple times over a 2-year period. The trial was held in the 238th District Court and presided over by Judge Elizabeth Leonard. The case was tried by Assistant District Attorneys Lacey Holloman and Evans Miller. Midland police search for scrub-wearing suspects for fraud. Midland Crime Stoppers is offering a cash reward for any information that leads to the arrest of the scrub-wearing fraud suspects. The scrub-wearing suspects are wanted by the Midland Police Department for using a stolen credit card on June 7th to buy several items at Sam's Club, according to Midland Crime Stoppers. They left the store with more than $10,000 worth of merchandise. If a person has information about the suspect, call the hotline. Go to 694tips.com or use the mobile app P3TIPS. A person could earn $1,000 cash reward if the tip leads to his arrest. No caller ID is ever used, and callers will remain anonymous. Reference MPD case number 220-609-023. This column is written by Mercedes Cordero. This is the obituary column, Saturday, August 6th. Barbara Ann Morgan. Barbara Ann Morgan, 91, passed away on August 3rd. A visitation will be 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday, August 6th, at Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. A private interment service will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Barbara was born in Anadarko, Oklahoma, on June 23, 1931, to Burl and Laura Loreen Graves. Barbara Morgan is survived by her daughter Laura Morgan and her husband Roger Coughlin, and her son Wayne Morgan. Barbara was preceded in death by her parents and her husband Travis Morgan. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donation to your favorite charity or to the Heart of Texas Country Museum in Brady. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Billy Linda Engel, October 15, 1941 to August 4, 2022. Billy was born in Snyder, Texas, to Bill and Elsie Hairston. She was preceded in death by her husband, Sam. She is survived by her children, John and Rhonda Engel of Lubbock, and Rob and Jody Engel of Odessa. She is also survived by three grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, the family wishes you to remember Linda as you spend time with your loved ones and consider donations to the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation. Christopher Caswell. Christopher Lee Caswell, age 42, passed away peacefully in Abilene on July 28, surrounded by family. Chris was born on June 15, 1980, in Colorado City and grew up in Midland. He was preceded in death by his mother, Lori Baker, grandmother, Elsie Barton, and grandfather, Albert Barton. He is survived by his father, Cletus Floyd Caswell, brothers, John Caswell and wife, Randy, and Wesley Braggs. Sisters, Dusty Lynn Caswell, Denise Lutjens, Crystal Shackelford, and Misty Gibbs. Children, Kristen Caswell, Charlie Chamberlain Caswell, Melissa Caswell, Aiden Caswell, and Gracelyn Caswell, as well as uncles, aunts, nieces, and nephews. Memorial services for Chris will take place August 7th at 2 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home. Online condolences at www.dignitymemorial.com/obituaries. Dan Moody. Dan Moody, a lifelong Midlander, died on August 3rd at his home in Midland. He was 72. He was born Dan Taylor Moody on May 3, 1950, in Wiesbaden, Germany, to parents Betty Jo Arrow and Major Benjamin Francis Moody, Jr., who at the time was stationed in U.S. Army Garrison Wiesbaden. Dan was preceded in death by his mother Betty, father Ben, and stepfather Jack. He is survived by his wife Melinda, son Walker, and his wife Chanel of Houston, son Taylor and his wife Ashley of Dallas, and son Morgan. He is also survived by his stepsisters, Marjorie Callahan of Denver and Priscilla Oboe of Robstown, as well as his six grandchildren. The Dan Moody Had an Awesome Life service will be held and announced by the family at a later date. Darlene Marie Place Boudreaux. Darlene Marie Place Boudreaux of Midland passed away Monday, August 1st. She was born on October 5, 1945, to Reese Lewis and Daisy May Place in Abbeville, Louisiana. She is survived by her husband, children, grandchildren, and great-grandchild, all of Midland, as well as brothers, nieces, and nephews. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to St. Anne's Catholic Church, Interim Hospice, or Manor Park Vogel Center. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Norma Lewis. Norma Jean Ravel Hill Lewis departed this life on August 3rd, peacefully in her home in Midland, at the age of 77. Norma was born to her beloved parents, Doxy Jerome and Lily May Hill, on August 9, 1944, in Austin. Norma was preceded in death by her parents, Doxy and Lily, her beloved brother, Gary Hill, her sister-in-law, Lily Ann Hill, her sisters, Pretty Ann and Gertie, and her firstborn son, Maurice. Her legacy will continue through her twin sons, Derek and Daryl, as well as nieces, nephews, and a host of other family and friends. Visitation will be Tuesday, August 9th, at Macedonia Baptist Church in Midland, starting at 10 a.m., with the funeral service starting at noon. Interment will immediately follow at Fairview Cemetery. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.asanchezTFH.com. Sonia K. Crump Roden. Sonia K. Crump Roden passed away peacefully at her home on July 4th. born on April 16, 1968, in Potter, Texas, to Timothy Allen Crump and Mary Lou Bevers Crump. Her brother, Timothy Allen Crump, Jr., preceded her in death. Sonia is deeply missed by her husband, Sean Kevin Roden, her dear parents, Timothy Allen and Mary Lou Crump, her brother, Curtis Lee Crump, and his wife, Lindsay, their children, Abigail and Aaron, as her mother-in-law, Carolyn Roden, her sisters-in-law, Carla Grover, and husband, Denny, and Lana Davis. The family will receive friends on Friday, August 19th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Crowder Funeral Home, 1645 East Main, League City, Texas. A funeral mass will be on Friday, August 26th at 10:30 a.m. at St. Clair of Assisi Catholic Church, 3131 El Dorado Boulevard in Houston. Service in Midland will be September 2nd at 11 a.m. at First Presbyterian Church. Service in Canyon will be September 9th at 11 a.m. at First Baptist Church, Canyon. Harvey Lee Jones III. Lee Jones, beloved husband, father, and grandfather, died on July 21st at his home in Bluffton, South Carolina. He was 72 years young. Lee is survived by his wife, Laura, daughter, Katie Jones Audis, and her husband, Jeremy, their daughters, Aspen and Gracie of Midland, and daughter, Abby Jones Davis, and her husband, Forrest Davis of Orlando, his sister, Pat Sullivan, and her children. A memorial service will be held this Friday, July 29th at 2 p.m., Saul's Funeral Home, 90 Simmonsville Road, Bluffton, South Carolina. Death Notices. James Marshall Smith. James Marshall Smith, 70, of Gardendale, passed away July 29th. He was born February 3, 1952, in San Angelo. The family will schedule a service at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Luis Madrid. Luis Acosta Madrid, 93, of Midland, passed away August 3rd. Viewing will be Monday, August 8th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Chapel. Funeral service will be Tuesday, August 9th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, August 6th, 2022. Section A. Athletic Hall of Fame nominations open. Nominations are rolling in to honor Odessa's top athletes, coaches, and sports teams. For the second year, the Odessa American is hosting the Odessa Athletics Hall of Fame to honor those who have contributed to the city's legend of athletics. Nominations for the Hall of Fame are now being accepted by the newspaper. An online form is available on the newspaper's website, www.oaoa.com, and printed forms may be obtained from and returned to the newspaper's office at 700 North Grant, Suite 800. Nominees can be athletes, coaches, and even entire sports teams. Last year, the first class was inducted into the Hall of Fame, and what a class of talent it was. Last year's inductees included Roy Williams, football standout for Permian, the University of Texas, and the NFL, Paul Chavez, Odessa College golf coach, the late Johnny Gentry, former Ector High School and Odessa College track star, Angela Brazil Smith, former Permian High School, Texas Tech University, and WNBA basketball star, John Wilkins, the legendary Permian High School football coach, and Julian Presley, baseball coach at Odessa High School and Odessa College. The banquet last year at the Odessa Marriott and Conference Center was well attended, and honorees shared their stories with the crowd. Wilkins talked about the love of athletics that Odessans have and his time at the helm of one of the most celebrated high school football programs in the country. Williams moved the crowd with his speech about his life and growing up in Odessa and his love for his family. Raziel Smith gave a powerful speech about how important it is to support your family and how little gestures go a long way to forming who people become as they grow up and how important athletics can be. Odessa has such an incredible and rich history in sports, and we believe the people who have contributed to this legacy should be recognized for all they have done, OA publisher Patrick Canty said. If ever there were a place so right for an Athletics Hall of Fame program, Odessa is it. Deadline for nominations is August 14th. Canty said a committee of newspaper and community leaders will select honorees from the nominations and celebrate the second class of inductees at a dinner and ceremony November 3rd at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Canty explained the honor will not be limited to local athletics. To be sure, through the years, we have had incredible athletes who either distinguished themselves while in Odessa as students or later as professionals, he said. We've had high school stars, but we've also been the springboard for the likes of professional football, basketball, and baseball players, golfers, world champion cowboys, and Olympians. If you go, the 2022 Odessa Athletics Hall of Fame at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 7 p.m., November 3rd. Odessa murderer free after 39 years. Baseball bat slayings rocked Odessa in early 1980s by Kim Smith. 39 years after using a baseball bat to kill his mother-in-law and brothers-in-law, former Odessan Kenneth Venney is set to be released from the Texas Department of Corrections Wednesday. Venney, 68, pleaded guilty to the July 13, 1983 murders of Ruby K. Fiesler, 50, and her sons, Paul, 17, and Keith, 13, and was sentenced to three concurrent 55-year terms by Ector County District Court Judge Joe Connolly. Authorities said Vinay broke into the Fiesler home on East 10th, beat the three to death as they slept with an aluminum bat, and ransacked the house to make it appear as though it had been burglarized. Ruby, a widow, worked in the Odessa High School cafeteria for 6 years prior to her death. She was survived by three daughters, five brothers, two sisters, her mother, and five grandsons. Venice's plea agreement angered many members of the victim's family. His wife, Cindy, who filed for divorce after the slayings, took out an advertisement lambasting then Ector County District Attorney Mike Holmes and supporting his opponent in the November 1984 election, Eric Augustin. Holmes went on to lose the election by 722 votes. In her ad, Cindy claimed Holmes had promised to take the case to trial and seek the maximum sentence possible. This man could be out on the street in your lifetime. It's time for a change, Cindy Parrish Green wrote in her ad. With Venet being just days away from release, others are now sounding the alarm. He's an idiot, and there's no telling what he would do if someone crossed him, said Jerry McCoy, one of Ruby's brothers. the 83-year-old St. Joe resident reached out to the Odessa American, hoping the paper would alert Ector County residents as to Vene's release. Despite the years gone by, McCoy remains angered by the plea agreement offered to Vene. "We were told he was going to get the needle, and he didn't," McCoy said. "I can't believe they gave him a deal for 3 murders with a baseball bat. What kind of a deal is that?" "He will never forgive Vene for his actions," McCoy said. "Maybe for 1, but for 3? No," McCoy said. One of his sisters, now 79, is afraid Vene will find her, and if that happens, McCoy said she's likely to shoot Vene. They've asked the state to order Vene refrain from contacting any of their family members. McCoy remembers Ruby as being a great mom and great sister who would always host family Thanksgiving and Christmas gatherings for her siblings, children, and grandchildren. "Things were never the same after the slayings," he said. Cindy moved to Arizona with her 2 children after the slayings, wrongly believing the rest of the family blamed her for the deaths, McCoy said. She died several years ago of breast cancer. "She thought everyone hated her and that she had something to do with it," McCoy said. "I told her, Cynthia, no one thinks that, and if they do, they're idiots." He often wonders why Vene did what he did, but knows he'll likely never learn the answer. "At times, it's really been rough, and other times you get busy living life only to get hit with it again," McCoy said. Modell Gonzalez is also angry about Vene's pending release. She attended Dowling Elementary School with Keith and remembers him always making people laugh. She now lives outside Austin, and she started a change.org petition asking Governor Greg Abbott to ensure Vene serve his complete sentence. It's been signed by more than 1,800 people. After the slayings, Gonzalez said she couldn't sleep by herself, fearing the killer would come after her too. "He was this monster in my head for years and years and years," Gonzalez said. She eventually became a crime scene specialist, probably due to the impact the Fiesler's death had on her, she said. As an adult, she researched the case using newspaper archives and was appalled at how it was handled, Gonzalez said. "Vene should have received the death penalty," she said. "I've tried to reach out to him to talk to him, but he won't answer my letters. I think I wanted to close something in my own brain. I wanted to see if he's sorry for what he's done." She also wanted to know why he felt the need to arm himself while in prison, she said. According to TDOC records, Vene was twice sentenced to 4 additional years in prison for carrying a deadly weapon. The first time Vene was caught with a weapon was in November 1990, and the second time was in October 1997. Gonzalez wonders if Vene was scared in prison or if he had some nefarious reason for arming himself. While Holmes doesn't recall all of the details of the case, he doesn't believe Vene wasn't eligible for the death penalty. Someone charged with committing a murder during the commission of a burglary could be charged with capital murder, but he thought the evidence showed Vene faked the burglary, Holmes said. Moreover, Holmes said that as insane as it sounds, people accused of committing multiple murders were not eligible at that time for the death penalty if no other crimes were alleged. He and other prosecutors later fought to broaden the definition of capital murder and were successful, he said. According to Odessa American Archives, Vene told his attorney he wasn't advised of his Miranda rights, but he confessed so he wouldn't be charged with capital murder. Vene also told police he had shot up some bathtub speed the day of the killings. As for the plea agreement, Holmes said he and his assistant district attorney at the time seemed to recall they were worried about getting a conviction at trial, but can't remember why. In any event, if any had received a life sentence, the maximum sentence he would have served was 60 years, and he could have been paroled after 30 years, Holmes said. As it turns out, Vennie was sentenced to 55 years, and thanks to his subsequent crimes, served 39. I thought 55 years was a good sentence, even though it was a really heinous crime, Holmes said. Holmes recalled that at the time, Odessa had earned the reputation for being the murder capital of the United States, based on the number of murders per capita. Many of those cases were especially gruesome, he recalled. It was just hellacious, Holmes said. Natural gas market soars, but Europeans face harsh winter without more Texas LNG, by Bob Campbell. The American and worldwide natural gas markets have changed so much in the past year that they are unrecognizable. American national politics have them so distorted that they're still only a shadow of what they could become, but raging worldwide demand and dramatically elevated prices are driving West Texas producers to kick out all the stops. Odessa oil man Kirk Edwards and Pinnacle Midstream II partner and chief commercial officer Drew Ward of Houston look for the futures market to stay strong for the rest of this year and next year, noting that the price per 1,000 cubic feet is holding at around $8, up from $3 last year. Edwards said the biggest energy exporter, the Freeport Liquefied Natural Gas Facility on the Texas Gulf Coast, had an explosion June 8th that caused a tremendous amount of gas not to be exported to Europe, so it had to be utilized in the United States. Then a lot of gas that would have gone into storage headed straight to the NG power plants and was burned and used, he said. Producers kept the price propped up when normally that would have created such a glut that the price would have cratered. Asked what he expects for the rest of 2022, Edwards said, "It depends on Russia. If they decide to pipe gas to Germany, things will be much better. If Russia keeps choking off Europe, there'll be very high gas prices this winter, and that will cause shortages in the U.S. too." Edwards' company, Latigo Petroleum, is one of the largest natural gas producers in the Texas Panhandle. There is no exploration right now because everyone is drilling the shale plays, he said. The plays are more of a manufacturing process than exploration because they know what they're going to hit. There is a lot more natural gas here in the Permian Basin, but it's having a hard time making it to the gas plants and being processed. With the LNG market, the U.S. has gone from being a net importer to now exporting 12 billion cubic feet per day, and that number is only projected to grow in the future. Ward said he is bullish on hydrocarbons for the foreseeable future, as we are undersupplied worldwide, as well as dealing with the Russian-Ukrainian instability. I believe we'll continue to see strong NG prices for the balance of this year and next year, he said. Geopolitical factors as well as underinvestment in the sector have created a perfect storm for strong commodity process for the near term. Edwards said President Biden's commitment to send Europe another 5 billion cubic feet per day definitely puts some weight under that market. The Odessan said producers like him can't get in on the European prices of $40 to $50 per 1,000 cubic feet because LNG is sold by the companies that own the gas plants and major pipelines. Edwards said futures contracts are going for a very healthy $7.80 through the rest of this year and into April 2023. "These prices are unprecedented," he said. The basin is the Saudi Arabia of natural gas in this country, and we could easily supply all of Europe's needs if the Biden administration would let us do what we could do. But President Biden and the environmentalists and states are blocking the pipelines we need to make that happen. People in Europe will freeze because we can't get the pipelines built here in the U.S., which is a shame. New York State is blocking a pipeline from the Haynesville Shale in Pennsylvania, so we can't move the gas east to liquefy it and put it on the LNG ships, Edwards said. Those northeastern states will not allow an LNG facility to be built either. Education and leadership could really help this country right now and help save Europe from being extorted and frozen to death by Russia this winter, which is exactly what's going to happen.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.